Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Idle Chatter. This is Ray Bohax, your humble host, coming to you from Hackettstown, New Jersey, and our family farm on Cat Swamp Road. We're getting a little bit of a winter mix today, or as they like to call it, rain, snow, sleet. We haven't had the rain yet. I guess that's coming. But not too bad as of yet. But over here in New Jersey, they called an emergency. And I don't know why they did that 12 hours prior to the snow coming down, but that really impacts commerce, because when there's a snow emergency in New Jersey, commercial vehicles are not allowed on the road. So, hey, what can you do? I'm not the governor, right? But hopefully today is finding things well for you. And hopefully in a lot of areas of the country that were in really cold weather, maybe, God willing, that kind of broke for you. But I think that it's still pretty cold from what I heard out west in the western corn belt and up in the Great Plains. So I think you guys are still dealing with some real cold weather, and God willing, that'll break soon. And let me see what else I wanted to talk to you about before we get started on today's show. What I would like to do is you take a moment or two to just thank everyone for listening to my show, Idle Chatter, the podcast, and also for visiting the website and using that as a resource for your farm. You know, please know that that truly humbles me that I have listeners and people visiting the website. I think at last count, 13 or 14 countries that I know of, not counting the United States and Canada. And that's really a humbling experience to be able to do something like this and have people from all around the world reach out and listen to it. So I hope that you continue to, and it is my goal to keep providing information to you, the farmer and rancher, not only in America and in Canada, but around the world, that can help you to make your business more profitable. And that is my goal. And God willing, by His grace, I could continue to please you and make it of value for you to listen. So I sincerely want to thank you. And as an aside to that also, please know that I want to help you in any way, so never hesitate to contact me at HockRodFarmer at farmmachinerydigest.com and open up a dialogue if you have a question, or hopefully I can explain something better to you that you may not understand. But also I want you to know that my business model for this whole venture, or should really call it an adventure, not a venture, because it has been an adventure, is that anyone that I get associated with on the website or through the podcast, through the show, I want you to know that I fully vetted. And anybody that is a sponsor of anything I do, and it's going to be the same way moving forward. And I'm not saying that other people don't do that, because I don't know what other people do. But I just want you to be rest assured that any organization, company, or group that you see with an ad on the website, the farmmachinerydigest.com website, or that is sponsoring something on the Idle Chatter show, know that I fully vetted them, and I believe in their product, I believe in their service, and I also believe in the way they run their business. And I'm not looking just to have anybody come on board. I want to be, they have to be cut from the same cloth as you and I are, and know that this is not my show, and that is not my website. It is your show and your website, and I am only the curator of it, the caretaker of it, the steward. So just know that it is all done for you. And I just want to thank you so, so much for the support that you've given me so early on into this. And it's growing every week, and I'm excited about that. And I'm looking to just make it better and better, and hopefully bring value to you. Alrighty. Well, today's show is going to be about what you, the farmer or rancher, need to understand about Tier 4 emission control systems on engines. And so in lots of ways, that's a hot topic today, and it's been a hot topic for quite some time. And I felt that it would be prudent for me to do a show on it so that you could have a basic understanding of the Tier 4 emission systems. And as we progress, probably, in theory, it was supposed to be this year to Tier 5, but it may not be for another year or so. But anyway, we need to get a foundation and understanding of this, and it's really not as awful as most people think. So hopefully, over the course of the next 45 minutes or so, I will be able to enlighten you on it and about the key components in this system and what you need to know. You don't need to engineer it. You don't need to design it, but what you need to know as the person, the consumer of that Tier 4 system. Because if you buy any type of equipment or vehicle that has Tier 4 on it, you are a consumer, as we would say in the industry, to that technology. But before I do that, I want to come to you with full disclosure. And the full disclosure being is that over the course of this show, I am going to do my best to, I'll say, convince you that Tier 4 emission controls are not as terrible as most people make them out to be. But in light of this full disclosure, you know, in engineering, we have an acronym. And an acronym is called KISS. And a lot of you have probably heard that, K-I-S-S. And that stands for Keep It Simple, Stupid. And I know I've used this before in previous segments. But as an engineer, you look to not complicate things. And you want to try to have the performance of whatever you're designing with as minimal complexity as possible. And, you know, whenever you have to add complexity to something in engineering, is that it's often frowned upon because you're going the long way to get there. But lots of times, when it comes to certain pieces of equipment or certain designs or certain applications, is that there is no way to avoid a certain level of complexity. So to that cause, I want to come clean, as I said, and I want to state that I like a KISS diesel engine. Keep it simple, stupid. Pump, line, nozzle, no emission controls, no anything, and there's less to go wrong. They're very, very reliable, and the reliability comes simply because it is not complicated. And in life, you know, just like if you're going to go someplace with four guys, so four guys going to go someplace, and then, you know, more people, more problems, right? You want to stop here for coffee. The other guy wants to stop there. I want to have pizza for lunch. The other guy wants a steak. So there's always complications. So the more things that you have, the more people, the more complicated, and the more systems that are on a piece of equipment or on an engine will bring along complication. And to many, and I am 100% in agreement with it, that the diesel engine in any type of application prior to the implementing of the different tiers of emission standards and the complexity it came with was probably the high water mark for that engine. And that was probably around 2005, 2006, 2007, prior to them instituting the advanced emission reduction standards. And the reason why I say that it was probably the high watermark in so many ways is that the combustion chamber design advanced, or the combustion design advanced on most diesel engines. The combustion chamber is really in this piston, not the cylinder head, but it's still considered a combustion chamber. The injection technology advanced, but it was still simplistic, and we just got better at building engines. It's like anything. You know, people don't realize that, but, you know, with any type of industry, are we better farmers than we were 50 years ago? Of course. Are we better farmers than we were 10 years ago? Yes. 5 years ago? Yes. And the proof of the pudding is that look at the yields, how the yields go up. And even if it's not the national average yield, even though that has gone up quite a bit, I believe I heard that for 2018 it's around 171 or 174 bushels per acre corn and about 50 bushels of soybeans. But you look at some of these high yield guys, I mean, they keep pushing the envelope. And then eventually that actually trickles down into the national yield from different technologies that are become to market. But anyway, is that, you know, so we always have to get better. So are we better at building diesel engines than we were 40, 50 years ago? And the answer is yes. And I know some of you are probably saying, that guy's nuts, that hot rod farmer, he's drinking too much New Jersey water, because the stuff we had years ago was better. Well, I guess maybe it depends on how you look at it. I don't think it truly was better as far as its efficiency was concerned. But as things went on, we definitely made them better. And then what happened was that we got better at it, I should say. And then what happened was that the government came about and instituted these emission standards. And, you know, when I teach this, and usually when I teach it, it's a 3-hour seminar, so I could really build a nice bridge and a nice segue into it and fully explain things. But on a show like this, we only have a little bit less than an hour. But that's of no detriment, because you're going to get everything that you need to know about this system within the next 45 minutes or so. But what I like to do is I like to make a simplistic analogy. And, you know, years ago, we had no running water in houses. Matter of fact, when when my grandparents and my parents bought our farm back in 1954, the farmhouse had no running water and no bathroom facilities. It had an outhouse and had a well outside. And it had no heat. It had a wood stove in it. So when my family bought it, they modernized the house and they put electricity in it. They put dug a well, had a well dug and a pump, and put a heating system, and obviously put a bathroom in it, and a septic tank. So now we could say we have these modern conveniences, but now if you come into the house and the pipe is leaking, and you never had a house with running water, you could say, man, this is a real problem, because the pipe is leaking. We used to go outside and get the water from the well and carry it in with a bucket. We never had water leaking all over the floor. Or when we had the outhouse, we never had the toilet back up. We never had any problems like that when we had the outhouse. So what I'm establishing here is that everything in life is a double-sided sword. So we have a convenience, And that convenience, when it's working, is wonderful. But when it does not work, our human nature being what it is, we look backwards and we say, hey, you know, we didn't have these problems before. And, you know, another great example is Harvey Firestone. Because, as you all know, and if you didn't know, you know from listening to my show, is that Harvey Firestone invented the pneumatic tire for farm equipment. So if you had a person that had a steel wheel rim and no tire, just a steel, we'll call it a steel rim / tire, he never got a flat tire. So now he buys, you know, it's 1936, he buys one of Harvey's pneumatic tires, and yes, he could go on the road safely with it and not tear the road up. He could go faster in the field. He's not chewing up his soil or compacting it to the level, but then he runs over a deer antler and pops the tire, and now he has a flat tire. So it's very easy for him to say, well, you know, these pneumatic tires, as an example, as an analogy, are great, but I never got a flat tire with the steel wheel, and now I have a problem. So the thing that I feel, and this is only my opinion, this is the gospel according to Ray, the hot rod farmer, all right, is that the reason for Tier 4 emissions, and we're just going to focus on that. We're not going to focus on all the tiers up to them because they were just a building block approach, a stepping stone to get to the final result, which was Tier 4 emission reduction. Realistically, there's no tangible value for the user of that equipment. You could say that because the fuel delivery is highly managed, and we'll get into that a little bit later, fuel delivery is highly managed, is that the engine runs quieter. I'm not going to say it runs smoother, runs quieter, or can maybe idle a little bit slower, and has the potential of giving off better fuel economy. And I know everybody's going, they use more fuel. Well, they use more fuel when things are not right. But it has the potential to give off, to provide better fuel economy. And so that's, so in essence, the quieter operation and the nicer drivability and some things like easier cold starts are truly the only tangible thing that the farmer gets from buying a Tier 4 engine in any of his equipment. So there's no real value there for them other than realizing that they're only part of a larger picture of being a good steward of the earth. So yes, we don't get much from it as far as a tangible value on our farm, but the earth with the cleaner emissions and the air that we all breathe and the water that we drink and the crops that we grow and the animals and what have you, we are being a much better steward of the environment by running a Tier 4 engine than we are running an older engine that to us appeared to be better. So we really need to step out of this, and we have to look at it and say that the world is bigger than me. The world is bigger than us. And you know, once you look at it that way, and as a Christian, I truly believe that I need to be a good steward of God's creation. Does it mean that I love everything about a Tier 4 engine? No, but I have to look past the complexity and say that, hey, just like having running water in a house, there may be some problems and they may cause some aggravation that carrying a bucket of water from the well did not have. But the end result is that this whole system, this whole Tier 4 emissions is much better for the earth than we are stewarding. So we should take some solace in that, and we should also recognize that we are doing our part for keeping for stewarding God's creation. Now, the other thing that I want to talk before I get into the emissions standards or emissions, how they work, the control systems, is that, you know, the fact of the matter is that there was absolutely nothing wrong in my estimation or in anybody's estimation, and if they say that it is wrong, they're probably pompous. There was nothing wrong at all with farming with older equipment. And I'm going to talk about this just as far as engines are concerned. I'm not talking about planter technology or cultivation technology or what have you. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You have an older tractor that runs fine. You have an older combine, an older sprayer, whatever it may be, an older truck, grain truck, and it runs fine, and it's a non-emission controlled engine. There's certainly nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing to be ashamed of having that. I have some people, you know, who follow me on Twitter, you know, if I happen to tweet out, I think that's the proper term, I'm still learning this, tweet out a picture or something, they'll come back and say, oh, I still farm that way with the older equipment. And that's great. That's wonderful, because whatever works for you. The thing is that the only caveat that I attach to that is that if you are farming for a living, you need to have reliable equipment. And if your older tractor, your combine, grain truck is reliable, God bless you. I'm with you 100%. You don't need to spend $110,000 for a new semi to haul grain to the grain elevator. But then again, the caveat being it has to be reliable, because if it's not reliable and you can't get in the field and do what you have to do or get the grain out, then that's useless to me. So you can't be penny wise and dollar foolish. So if you could keep the older equipment running and it is not impacting your farm operation because you're it's breaking down at the most inopportune time, then as long as it's not doing that, that's wonderful. But as time marches on and the clock marches on, what we consider older equipment today, one day to the young people coming up in agriculture, and maybe your son or your grandson or your daughter or your granddaughter, a 2019 Tier 4 tractor or grain truck or what have you is going to be old to them. So we really need to get ahead of the curve and start to understand these systems to the level that will provide us a return on our investment, and because eventually we're not going to be able to farm with that 1987 tractor or pull grain with that 1987 truck anymore. And it may not happen in our lifetime, and hopefully it does, because that means that you're staying healthy and you're still actively farming. So we have to look at it, and I'm saying this to you because I want you to be open-minded, because so many times when you discuss this, and I gave this seminar twice at Commodity Classic on the main stage, compliments of Firestone and Successful Farming magazine, but anyway, is that people close their ears. And this happened in the car industry, because as you all know, part of me is from the car industry. And this happened where they started to add fuel, electronic ignition, and they added fuel injection, and this, and you get all these naysayers, that's no good, I'm never going to buy that, I'm never going to do this, that's junk, blah, 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 they go on for 10 hours, right? And like I said, it added complexity that was not there before, but the fact of the matter is, it's just like you cannot buy and use, maybe you could buy one, but you can't use a rotary dial telephone today, that we have to embrace what's happening and what's coming down the pike. It doesn't mean that you have to love it, all right, but you have to embrace it and know how to work with it. And that is what this whole show is about today. It's going to be a simplistic approach to understanding Tier 4 emissions. Now, in essence, there are five emissions that you really need to be concerned with, or the industry is concerned with. I believe there's four. Let me go through them in my mind. Okay. The first emission is hydrocarbons, and hydrocarbons is unburned fuel. The second emission that the government is worried about coming from a diesel engine, this is also with a gasoline engine, is carbon monoxide, and that is partially burned fuel. The third emission that they're concerned with is oxides of nitrogen, so that's NO and then lowercase x, and that is a pollutant that directly impacts the ozone level above the earth, and it is created through pressure, heat, and exposure time in the combustion chamber when the leading edge flame front temperature is above 2,500 degrees. And I realize that that's a lot to grasp through an audio show without having a PowerPoint or a booklet in front of you, all right? And then the fourth emission that we're concerned with diesel engines, is particulate matter, or PM is abbreviated, and that is the soot that is found in the diesel exhaust. So basically, when you see an engine blowing black smoke at diesel, so like these tractor pull guys and guys with the pickup trucks and everything, and they like to roll coal, well, that's actually, it's soot, it's actually called particulate matter. And that was one of the main concerns for the emissions control plan of Tier 4 being implemented. Now, the government knew that you could not go from no emissions, a pump line nozzle engine, minimal to no emission controls whatsoever, and go to a large amount of emission reduction. And the biggest violator that they were concerned with is the soot, which is they call particulate matter. So, in essence, that black soot is what drove this whole Tier 4 system. And in essence, what is going to happen is it's going to be a synergistic approach. And to achieve a reduction in all four of those emissions, carbon monoxide, particulate matter, hydrocarbons and oxides of nitrogen, NOx, is going to take a cumulative effect of having a better injection system, a better combustion chamber, having fuel that is less polluting, low sulfur fuel, and then having some sort of after treatment in the exhaust. So in essence, when you put this all together, is that that is what encompasses a Tier 4 system. And now it's, and the federal government does not care how you get to the reduced emission standard. And I'm going to break away for a few minutes here, because this begs to ask the question, or answer the question that you're probably asking in your mind, or if not, you will be in a minute or two, is that you need to understand that the emission standards for all diesel engines are not the same. So you could have arguably a 100 horsepower diesel engine in a pickup truck, which nobody has right now. We'll use that as an example. Well, let's say a 300 horsepower engine. That'd be probably something you could grasp onto better. A 300 horsepower engine in a half ton, three quarter ton pickup truck, you could have a 300 horsepower engine in a field sprayer, you could have a 300 horsepower engine in a backhoe, and you could have this real super duper, for argument's sake, 300 horsepower engine in a skid steer. Now, it is very possible, due to the use of that piece of equipment, and the way the government defines the use is how much horsepower it's going to make per hour in the type of application it is. So if you have a guy with a backhoe and he's not really loading that engine most of the time, the emissions that are going to be emitted from it are going to be less, because that engine is using less fuel. It's not under such a load. If you have a combine, and the combine predominantly is used most of the time under a load, its emissions output is going to be higher. So what happens is that the take-home message here is that if you have, as any dynamic farm would, if you have a multitude of different types of equipment that all have meet Tier 4 standards, let's say you're blessed and everything you got is 2019, you got everything in a farm shop is 2019. Right? So the thing is that you're going to go look at your skid steer loader and say it has a different type of, it doesn't have all the emission controls that my pickup truck has. And my pickup truck may have less emission or more emission controls than my combine. So there is a use standard. So Tier 4 is not an, you can't paint it with the same brush and go, well, how come this one has this and this one doesn't have it? But a road vehicle, anything that goes on the road, be it a pickup truck or a semi, not a sprayer or something that you drive on the road to get to the field, but anything that is a registered road vehicle will have the most stringent emission control standards applied to it, and thus will usually have the greatest level of complexity in their system. Right? So that's important if you understand. And as you're shopping for equipment, now continuing that same theme, is that depending upon how efficient in different ways that manufacturer's engine is, then will also determine what emission package, and we call it a package in the industry, is on that engine. So for instance, and please forgive me if I have my data incorrect, but I believe up until last year, and they may still do it, Case IH has on their farm equipment what they call an SCR-only system, supplemental catalytic reduction of oxides of nitrogen. That they're not using a DOC, diesel oxidation catalyst, and a DPF, diesel particulate filter. On the same token, if you look back a couple of years, Navistar, which is International Trucks, with their Max Force engines, did not use the SCR system, like Cummins did in Caterpillar in Detroit, and they had what they used called extreme EGR, and that became problematic for them really not a design problem, in-service problem. But anyway, it became problematic, and they kind of did away with it, and now they're instituting the other type of controls. So when you're shopping for equipment, and this is important also if you're buying something that's Tier 4 on a auction or on a resale, is that you need to be familiar with what type of emission control systems that engine needs to employ for, number one, its use by federal government standards, and number two, how the manufacturer got those reduced emissions. The EPA does what they call a bag test on all engines, whether it's gasoline or diesel, and they actually weigh the amount of emissions that come out of that tailpipe during their load cycle, and that is how they determine it. So if you have a, for instance, if brand A has a more efficient combustion chamber, then they would most likely have a less CO, HC, and possibly particulate matter or soot coming out of the exhaust. So the thing is that you need to be cognizant of that. Now, the emission control methods that were rolled in and then eventually came to culmination for the Tier 4 system is a multifaceted approach. And it is the introduction of low sulfur fuel. And you know, we all talk about low sulfur fuel, but nobody tells you why we made it. And the people just say emissions. Well, that's just like saying crop protection or fertilizer, right? I mean, there's all different types of fertilizer, micronutrients, macronutrients, N, P, and K. So you can't just say emissions, all right? The purpose of low sulfur, ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel, which was first low sulfur, then ultra-low sulfur, is a reduction in particulate matter, that is soot. So low sulfur diesel, ULS, the ultra-low sulfur diesel, will have less soot production, even in an older non-emission engine, just by nature of it not having the sulfur in it. And as an aside to it, the removal of the sulfur, the sulfur was never the lubricant. The process to remove the sulfur from the diesel fuel is what destroyed its lubricity, and that is why you need to additize your fuel on newer or older engines with a lubricity additive. So the sulfur was responsible for particulate matter. All right, the updated engine oils, which is like API CJ4 and above, was a low ash content oil, and that also created a reduction in particulate matter. So now look at this logical steps that were taken. It wasn't as convoluted as the layperson thought, is that by having the fuel burn cleaner and create less particulate matter, and having the engine oil create less particulate matter because it has less ash in it, we are starting to clean up the emissions from that engine without touching anything on the engine or putting anything that is in the exhaust stream, which is called an after treatment. So those were the first two steps. The introduction of exhaust gas recirculation, EGR, created a reduction in oxides of nitrogen. Now, oxides of nitrogen, there is a formula, which I'm just telling you this so you don't get mired in it, all right? And it's called the Zeldovich equation, and Mr. Zeldovich discovered the formula or what is needed to create oxides of nitrogen production during combustion. You know, now keep in mind, this is not just combustion in an engine, but this is combustion in a power plant, what have you. And so there are three things that come into play to create oxides of nitrogen coming out of the exhaust. It's pressure, heat, and exposure time. And that's the same thing for gasoline engines as it is diesel, even though this show is talking just about diesel. Now, so we have pressure. The high cylinder pressure that is created in a diesel engine is very prone to creating oxides of nitrogen because that's one step of the three steps in the formula that we need. I said the formula, I should actually say it's the recipe. So we have pressure, now we have heat, the heat of combustion. when the leading edge flame front temperature reaches 2500 degrees or beyond, not to be confused with the exhaust gas temperature read with a pyrometer on the dashboard of your truck or your piece of equipment. The exhaust gas is read far away from the exhaust gas temperature with a pyrometer is not read in the combustion chamber. So what I'm discussing here is the leading edge flame front temperature in the combustion chamber. When that gets to about 2500 degrees and beyond, the amount of oxides of nitrogen production increases dramatically. So we have the pressure, we heat, and then we have what's called the exposure time, or the what I like to use the word is residence time or exposure time. The equation actually has residence in it. I call it exposure. And that's the length, how fast the flame goes across the burn cycle in the cylinder. So if you look at it this way, let's say there's a pot of boiling water on the stove. Alrighty? So the boiling water on the stove is that has the heat in it. Now, if you were to take your finger and stick it real quick in the water and pull it out, boop, boop, like that, you'd feel the heat, but you would not burn your skin. Because why? You did not have a long exposure time. Conversely, with the cold that we're having this winter in so many areas of the country, and especially up in Canada, is that if you went outside for 1 second, all right, you would not have frostbite. You stay outside for a minute, you could start to get frostbite. And they usually have a qualifier for that in the news that you don't have any unexposed skin for more than 2 minutes with the weather conditions. So that is the exposure time. So the pressure created by combustion, the heat by combustion, and the exposure time, how quickly that combustion event takes place, how quickly that flame goes across the bore, which is the, what's called the flame speed measured in meters per second, all right, will determine the oxides of nitrogen production. Now, if you alter any one of those three in that Zeldovich equation, you will have a reduction in oxides of nitrogen. And as I said before, that oxides of nitrogen are what create, attack the ozone level and create ground level smog. So EGR is the first line of defense in reducing oxides of nitrogen. The next thing we have on most Tier 4 systems is what's called a DOC. It's a diesel oxidation catalyst, and that reduces carbon monoxide, which is partially burned fuel, hydrocarbons, which is unburned fuel, and it has some impact on particulate matter. All right, so has some impact, but not that great an impact. The next thing is what everybody is truly aware of is the diesel particulate filter. And the diesel particulate filter basically is a trap. It's like lots of people call it a soot trap. And prior to Tier 4, a lot of, if that was used, it was called a soot trap and not a DPF, diesel particulate filter. And what that does is that holds that soot, that particulate matter, inside a monolith. It looks like a catalytic converter, like a honeycomb. It holds it in there, and does not, it traps it, like a moth trap in the field, all right, or a mouse trap, or what have you. It traps it, and it holds it there and does not allow the particulate matter to go out into the atmosphere. The whole problem being is that it can only hold so much particulate matter. And once it becomes full, it has to go through something called a regeneration cycle, which is basically the nemesis of anybody who has a Tier 4 engine. And we're going to discuss those regeneration cycles in simplistic terms in a couple of minutes. And the regeneration cycle converts that particulate matter to ash. And ash is more finite and takes up less room. Right, and then eventually that ash needs to be removed from that diesel particulate filter, and there's a special procedure to do that. But on a properly running engine, you should be able to go at least 500,000 miles on a road vehicle or 5,000 hours without having to remove the ash on a properly running engine from the diesel particulate filter. Alrighty, and if you took care of it and everything was right, then you could go even a little bit longer than that. So keep in mind as we build into this technology on the show today, is that how the state of tune and how well you take care of that engine is going to be is paramount in whether this system becomes what we call in engineering invisible, that you don't know it's there, or becomes problematic, a headache. And with anything with machinery, a headache costs you money. It either costs you money from your checkbook, or it costs you, because even if the check that you're writing is not that large, it costs you in lost productivity. And as I always like to say, which I'm sure you will all agree with, is that farming, agriculture is like an emergency vehicle. You need to be able to get in there. It's like a fire engine. You need to be able to get that crop in the ground on the ultimate date for planting, and use no and any type of failure that you have to stop you from getting in the field, be it planting, be it spraying, be it doing a foliar feeding or fungicide application, is going to impact your yield. So we have the diesel particulate filter, and then we have what we call SCR, which is selective catalytic reduction. And that is causes a major reduction in the oxides of nitrogen beyond what the EGR system could do. And what the selective catalytic, the SCR system, uses is what is called diesel exhaust fluid, which basically is automotive-grade urea and deionized water. And that's DEF is what it's called. And some people in other industries call it just urea. Because believe it or not, a lot of power plants that make electricity run I believe 40% urea-based exhaust fluid. They don't call it diesel exhaust fluid. They call it exhaust fluid. All right. Versus I think it's 37.5% on the 32.5% on the diesel exhaust fluid, and 67.5% deionized water on a farm vehicle. So we have that technology, and then the last technology that is a part of the Tier 4 system is high pressure common rail fuel injection. And that is electronic, almost like gasoline-style injection, in lieu of mechanical control of the fuel events. And the high-pressure common rail has the ability to minimize all four emissions, CO, HC, CO2, and oxides of nitrogen. So to recap very quickly, we have the emission control methods that we are using are low sulfur fuel, updated engine oil, exhaust gas recirculation, diesel oxidation catalyst, diesel particulate filter, selective catalytic reduction, which is married to diesel exhaust fluid, and high pressure common rail injection. Now, anything that happens inside the combustion chamber of the engine is what we would call an internal system, makes sense, right? Or an in-cylinder system. And then anything that happens after the exhaust port of the cylinder head is what we would consider in the industry an after treatment. Now, when you look at a diesel engine, a Tier 4 diesel engine, the way the systems will be laid out, the after treatment systems, which is the DOC, the DPF, and the SCR, are in that order. So the DOC, the diesel oxidation catalyst, is closest to the engine. Next will come the diesel particulate filter, and the component in the exhaust stream that's furthest away from the cylinder head is the supplemental catalytic reduction, or the SCR. Alrighty? So that is how it works. Now, the biggest bane that everyone has a complaint with is with the Tier 4 system is during the regeneration process. Because other than that, the basic fact is that the systems are invisible. All right? So the regeneration process, now there's a number of ways that the system could decide on whether it needs to clean or turn the particulate matter to ash in the diesel particulate filter, the DPF. It's alphabet soup. I know it's confusing. And that is either by looking at the pressure in and out of it to see that it's blocked, or they use an algorithm and the algorithm says, based upon this much running time at this much load and this much fuel that has been consumed, that we need to do a cleaning. And the regeneration is basically a cleaning. It's converting the soot, the particulate matter, to ash. Now, for that system to regenerate, it needs to have an elevated heat. And there are three types of regenerations. There is a passive regeneration, there is an active regeneration, and a forced regeneration. With a passive regeneration, that you, let's say you're combining corn, so the engine is really loaded. For a passive regeneration to take place, that means by the operating state of the engine that the diesel particulate filter, the DPF temperature, is high enough that it's naturally converting soot to ash. It would be akin to like mineralization of organic matter in the soil. That if you have enough heat, you have enough moisture, you will mineralize the organic matter in your soil and it will release nitrogen. So if you have operating state that is creating enough heat, then that system is passively, unbeknownst to you, it's mineralizing itself and it's cleaning itself. And that is the ideal. That is what you want. All right? And what has to happen is that DPF has to reach a temperature of around 1,000 degrees internally to convert the particulate matter to ash. So now let's say that your operating conditions are not sufficient or proper to create a passive regeneration. Then they have what is called an active regeneration. And what the active regeneration is the same thing. It's to convert the particulate matter to ash. And what it's basically going to do, it has a fuel injector. It actually takes diesel fuel, but it's not on the engine, but they call it an HC doser, a hydrocarbon doser, and that basically shoots fuel, controlled by the ECU, the engine controller, and sprays fuel into the diesel oxidation catalyst to act like a furnace. And that oxidation catalyst superheats, sends that heat into the next thing down the line, which is the diesel particulate filter, and does a burn-off. And the thing basically is that you usually need to have that engine operating state, and active regeneration takes about 45 minutes. So you could be, we'll stick with the combine, combining corn, and if the situation deems that it needs to burn off and the natural heat from loading the engine is not enough, the system will evoke an active regeneration, and it'll actually shoot fuel into the diesel oxidation catalyst, confusing, I know, the DOC, to act like a furnace to send the heat exhaust into the diesel particulate filter to come and burn it off, and burn off the particulate matter and make it ash. Now, if none of these things work, and it's deemed by the controller, as I said, either through pressure or pressure sensors or by running events, that it will do a forced regeneration. And a forced regeneration will cause you to park the piece of equipment or the truck. The computer will take over and it will be spend about 45 minutes. The RPM will be very high. It may instruct you to open the hood and it'll use a lot of fuel. All right? It'll use a lot of fuel. So basically, in essence, and then after that, the system will restore itself and clean itself. So that is the three regeneration systems. The goal basically is to have the engine run properly and have the intended use, or I should say its intended use, its use to be able to create a passive regeneration. So if you guys buy a diesel pickup truck, and I said this before, and you use it 5 miles to go to town, and 10 miles, 15 miles, and go back and forth to town, and you idle a lot, and you loaf around the farm, you go check the cattle with it, that's never going to reach the operating temperature to create a regen cycle. And it's eventually going to be forced to create, to have you park it and create an institute of forced regen. And during those forced regen, you use a lot of fuel, you tie up the piece of equipment, the engine, you can't use it, you can't drive it, and it's problematic. And that's really what turns people off. If you have a guy who runs this diesel engine and it does passive regenerations, he never even knows it's regenerating, because inherently it's like the mineralization of the organic matter. I use that example because I think it's the best one. The mineralization of the organic matter in the soil. You don't know what's going on. You just pull a tissue test on your plant and you say, man, you got enough N here. This thing, I'm getting 400 bushels per acre. All right. So that basically is, in essence, the real sticking point. And there are other sticking points, let's say like the EGR circuit. I'm going to do a show just about EGR and its problems and how to cure that. But this is a basic overview show today of the Tier 4 emission standards. So the thing basically is that as we come to a close today, let's put a common sense farmer, right, approach to this. We gave you a little bit of chemistry, Zeldovich equation, what have you, pressure, heat, exposure time. That's just FYI stuff so you can understand what's going on. But let's put a common sense approach to this. If you want to have the minimal amount of problems and potentially zero problems with your Tier 4 system, all you need to do is follow this recipe. All right? And it's very simplistic, and follow it, and you'll be fine. Okay, whenever possible, open the hood to let the heat out. You're done running the truck, you're done running a piece of equipment, let the heat out. Because there's a lot of electronics, a lot of sensors for all of this system to work, which we didn't cover in 40 minutes, all right, on the show today. But if you let the heat out, because whenever you shut off an engine, it becomes heat soaked. The temperatures elevate and you cook everything. So if you let the heat out after you're done running it, or any time you're going to shut it off, let it idle for 30 or 40 seconds, open the hood, any piece of equipment, let the heat out. Over time, you will save those components, those wiring harnesses, everything, the gaskets in that engine, and you'll save everything, and it'll be a much happier camper, and it will not become anywhere near as problematic. The second thing, basically on Tier 4, is just use the recommended oil and coolant for that engine. If the manufacturer tells you use this grade of oil or this type of coolant, don't say, oh man, I got this other stuff in the corner and they want me to buy this stuff. No, it's because of the chemical composition of that coolant and that oil. If it's a CJ4 oil they want you to use, just use it. It's a low ash oil. All right, it's going to save you a lot of aggravation. It's going to save you. Just think of it as your sprayer. Then not having an antagonistic tank mix partner put in it that you did a jar test. They did the jar test. Use the oil they tell you, and use the coolant that they tell you, and you're going to reduce a lot of your headaches. Treat your fuel with an additive featuring multiple modes of action. Because remember, this is emissions, right? And emissions start in the combustion chamber, and a key component of this system is the fuel, and being able to keep the carbon deposits down on the pintle of the common rail injector and in the combustion chamber. All right. So if you use a fuel that is additized properly, has an increased cetane level, has all of those benefits to it, you will have a much cleaner burn. Right, you will have much more accurate fuel delivery, and when you have that, every emission out of the four that I discussed will drop just inherently. It's like having a healthy crop, having healthy soil. Right, you go in your field, you have healthy soil, you have a lot of earthworms. You have no earthworms, you know you don't have healthy soil. So by additizing that fuel, it's about 5 cents a gallon to additize it. It's probably one of the best things that you could do four, a tier four engine for any engine. Advertise that fuel. Don't be penny wise and dollar foolish. Advertise your bulk fuel. That engine will run cleaner and it'll have to rely, because anything that's put in the exhaust stream of an engine, to clean it up is a crutch. If we can't clean it up in the combustion chamber, we've got to clean it up afterwards. So the thing basically is, that just like your plant, if your plant can get all the nutrients out of the soil, then you don't need to foliar feed it, right? And then that basically is it. So if you do those things, now keep in mind that eventually we're all going to own Tier 4. And closing with today's show, which I just want to tell you was brought to you by Firestone Ag in totality, because we did not do a special delivery segment, but by doing those things, you could have, I'm not going to say a problem-free Tier 4 system, because it is complicated, but by letting the sensors stay good, the wiring stay good, the hoses stay good, by additizing your fuel, having good combustion events, all right? Good combustion events, proper combustion events, doing those things, letting the heat out, using the proper oil and the proper coolant, you will be surprised how minimally this problematic the system will be. So listen, I want to thank Firestone. You know, we brought them up earlier today because they're the guys that put the rubber tires on the tractor. And, you know, and it's to my way of thinking, as I said, you know, early on in the podcast, I explored Firestone Ag before I took them on board. And they are a wonderful, wonderful company. And in my mind, they are the leading edge go-to guys for farm tires. So when it comes time to look at tires, look, if you're like me, you do your due diligence. You may not need tires for 5 years, but check out that Firestone brand. And if you come into Commodity Classic, please come by the Firestone booth and stop by and say hello. And look, I know I went through this quickly. I want to thank you for listening, but the take-home message is do those four or five things and worry about getting the most yield out of your crops and not rethinking Tier 4 emissions. You don't need to be afraid of it. You just need to handle it differently. You have a blessed day, and I thank you so much for listening, and I will, God willing, talk to you next week. Bye-bye.